I try to remind myself every day that I go to work to play dress up and play make believe. I mean, there are so many other elements that have to occur, but I think coming back to the fact that we get to be creative every day and we get to try new things and we get to live in this beautiful music.
The Kalamazoo Symphony Orchestra season ends this Friday night with a semi-staged production of Verdi's Otello. And tonight on WMUK's Let's Hear It, I'll talk with two members of the cast, mezzo-soprano Julianne Miller, who sings the role of Emilia, and tenor David Gordon, who sings the role of Rodolfo. Hi, I'm Kara Lawrence. Glad you could come along tonight for WMUK's Let's Hear It. Mezzo-soprano Julianne Miller hails from California and is currently based in Chicago, where she is participating in the Lyric Opera's Young Artist Program. A graduate of the University of Michigan, David Gordon is based in New York, where he can be found in a number of roles, both on and off stage. But it wasn't too long ago that you could have seen David Gordon on stage in Kalamazoo.
Well, I grew up in Kalamazoo, moved here before I started elementary school. So I went through the Kalamazoo public school system and graduated from Loy Norix High School, and really started my love of the stage and of stage music then with the Junior Civic when I was a kid in fourth grade, and then with the musical theater program at Loy Norix High School with Marie Kerstetter and Kathy Millay and David Grapes, and then in the Civic Summer Theater. And then when I left Kalamazoo, I went to the University of Michigan. I spent a few years there as a theater major doing mostly directing and design work and a little bit of performing, but mostly design work. And then I left school and went to New York and lived there for a few years and worked in technical theater mostly. My sort of most high-level gig was backstage for the Blue Man Group for about a year and a half, I guess. And then I decided I wanted to go back to school. I had never finished my first degree, so I auditioned for the music school at the University of Michigan and was accepted, thinking that I wanted to maybe be a conductor. I wasn't quite sure, but voice was my instrument. I was also a saxophone player, but it had been a long time. So I auditioned as a singer and got into the school and started studying with George Shirley, who was a very, very well-known tenor, sang the Metropolitan Opera for a long time, who was teaching there. And it only took a couple of months before I got to learn a lot more about what my voice could do and got to know a little bit about opera. I had never actually seen an opera until I was back in music school at age 24 or 25. Did a music degree at Michigan and then was accepted to Manhattan School of Music for a master's degree and moved to New York, and I've been there ever since.
It sounds like you have a very big picture look at theater, music, opera. You've seen it from several sides. I suppose now that actually lends to your ability to be a singer in a prominent role, but you know what's going on behind the scenes as well.
It does. It makes it, I feel very at home in any part of a theater, on the stage, in the audience, with the tech crew. I mean, I can talk to all of the crew and the designers in their language. And of course, I'm a studied musician, and so I have that background as well. So yeah, I feel very comfortable in theaters and in any aspect. And I still direct and do a little bit of conducting and teach Shakespeare to my acting classes. So it all sort of comes together in a production like this.
It's pretty darn versatile, wouldn't you say, Julianne?
I agree.
Well, you also are a trained violinist as well as a singer, and you were telling me a little bit about the decision to pursue both that came around college age.
Yes. So growing up, I'd always sung in choirs. I did quite a bit of ballet. So I'd had experience on stage and I had experience with music. And when it came time to decide what I wanted to do kind of in high school, I decided that music was really more my passion. And as a violinist, I was working with a teacher that also taught at the San Francisco Conservatory and taught at the local university. And so I decided that that was going to be my route. And about a year into my college experience, I thought, well, let's try taking, you know, some voice lessons and maybe add a second degree and see how that goes. And I sort of fell in love with voice and opera, and it combined my love of the stage that I had developed as a dancer, and it also come my love of music. And it's for me, when it comes to preparing a role or preparing a concert, there's more variety in what you get to practice. So there's the acting aspect, there's sometimes the movement aspect, the dancing aspect, there's the language aspect, and there's also the technical singing aspect. So I liked that variety, and it kind of kept me going in that path. So
your voice type, as they say, is mezzo-soprano.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that right away? Does that change? Is it flexible?
David and I were discussing this actually in the car on the way over. For some voices, it's very obvious what type of repertoire you'll be singing. For me, I kind of went back and forth between soprano and mezzo-soprano for a while. Usually you determine a voice type based on where the breaks are, where the voice likes to live as far as tessitura or the range goes. And so my teacher and I, or several teachers and I, worked together over the years and just to really, really learn what my voice liked. And the mezzo-soprano rep is where I live. I won't sing Carmen or Dalila, but I will sing Cherubino and Octavian and the composer in Ariadne. So you just have to work with someone and have a good set of ears listening to you.
Right. It's not quite the cookie cutter label that one would think.
It can be for men. Men's voices operate differently from women's voices. And with men, it once you begin serious training, when you figure out where the register changes are in an individual's voice, that goes a very long way toward determining the type of music, the what we use this German word, Fach, to describe the different voice types, whether you're a tenor, a baritone, a bass baritone. And it's pretty set in stone in a very short period of time once you've reached the age where your voice has finished changing. Whereas with women's voices, there's a lot more freedom to figure out what's comfortable and where some women can just decide what they want to sing, not necessarily what their voices are cut out for. With men, it's a little more straightforward than that.
Yeah.
So for either of you, is this the first production of Otello that you've participated in?
It is for me.
It is your mm-hmm. first Otello. So tell me about the process of preparing a brand new opera. Do you learn just your role? Do you learn the rest of the music?
Well, so it depends a little bit on the role. For this one, my part is largely as the sidekick to the villain. And so, as with any role, one of the first things I do is pick up the score and read through the whole thing. So I know what's going on musically and basically what's going on in the story. And I read the play again, which I had read several times before. And then I go through a process of translating all of the Italian so that I know exactly what I'm talking about at any given moment. As we were saying before, I spend some time handwriting out the text of what I'm singing so that I get it memorized. I practice the notes and make sure that it sounds the right way. I bring it to the people that I work with. Most all of us have teachers and coaches that we work with, particularly when we're first learning a new piece, to get an outside set of ears. You know, what we hear in our own brains and in our own heads is not the same thing that everybody on the other side of the front of our face hears. And so we need some ears to help us to sort of align things. And then in my case, because I spend a lot of time listening to Iago, who's the villain, the baritone in the opera, I had to spend some time figuring out what he's talking about, making sure that I understand the nuances of his text and so that as an actor I can respond appropriately.
And Julianne?
This is actually my second production of Otello. I had the privilege of making my debut with Lyric Opera of Chicago, singing this role back in October in their season opener. So it's exciting to return to a role that you've done before, because you can take all the things you learned in that first production and apply most of them. The director for the production in Chicago wanted a little bit more of a demure Emilia, someone who was used to a heavy hand from Iago, and I'm really appreciating that in this production I get to be a little bit more in Iago's face, a little bit of a stronger woman. So you take bits and pieces of the character that you developed from other productions, and you can apply some of it and build on what you've already established for yourself.
Othello and the villain Iago and Othello's wife. Is it Desdemona, you say?
Mm-hmm. Or yes.
Desdemona, is that what I'm
like? Desdemona, you're correct.
They're great characters, but they need your roles in order to get the story moving along and make the tragedy start to roll. And it's a phenomenal thing to watch these betrayals happen, and you can't stop it. You're in your seat going, oh no, that's not, Desdemona is innocent. And
right.
And your characters are, in a way, the pawns that allow this sort of tragedy to move along. And why don't I ask one of you or both of you to go over the story and the high points of what people will see on Friday night.
Sure, I can try to muddle our way through it. The opera starts actually at the second act of Shakespeare's play. There's a first act of Shakespeare's play that doesn't appear in the opera. In the second act, and in the beginning of the opera, Othello has returned triumphant from the Crusades. And when he returns, there's a big storm, and it's not clear that his ship is going to make it into port, and we're all, the other men in the cast are on the shore watching him come in, and the boat makes it in, and he makes his entrance, and he sings the Esultate, which is one of the most challenging entrances in all of opera. It's a big, high, exposed, difficult piece to sing. So he comes in, he sings his big entrance, and he leaves, at which point Iago starts his plotting. Iago is upset at Othello because he promoted someone else. He promoted Cassio.
He didn't and Othello, get the job.
Right. Iago didn't get the job, and he's angry at Othello. And he also makes it pretty clear that he is a little bit racist as well. Othello famously is a Moor who is probably North African, whereas everybody else in the cast is, all the other characters are Italian, Venetian. And he lets Rodrigo, my character, know that he's angry with Othello, that he's angry that Cassio got promoted. Rodrigo, my character, is in love with Desdemona and wishes that Othello weren't around, wishes that Othello had died in the shipwreck rather than made it to the shore. And so Iago hatches this plot to make Cassio look badly in the eyes of Othello so that perhaps Cassio will get booted out and Iago will get instated in the job that he wants. We get Cassio drunk, he gets reprimanded by Othello, he loses his rank and takes off, and Iago is pleased with all of this. And then Desdemona enters, she's been awakened by the revelry, and they sing their beautiful, beautiful love duet at the end of the first act. In the second act, Iago continues the machinations of the plot. He explains to Cassio that he can get back in Othello's good graces by talking to Desdemona, which Cassio then does, and Iago arranges for Othello to see this, and Othello gets jealous because Cassio was the guy who had courted Desdemona on his behalf.
Right. We see Othello express his deep reverence and love for his wife before that, so we know the intensity of his feeling for her.
Mm-hmm.
So Iago knows this is a point where he can really drive Othello mad.
Yeah, the intensity of Othello's feelings in all ranges of emotion are what make that role such an interesting and compelling role, I think. And it's why, in part, I think Verdi wrote such difficult and compelling and intense music for that character, because it is all about his love and jealousy and anger and the extremes that he goes to in those emotions that really continue the plot moving forward.
And I don't think Othello ever experiences a small degree of an emotion. It's always the extremes, and so it adds great intensity to the story, as David was saying.
So Iago manages to convince Othello that there may be something going on between Cassio and Desdemona, and then Iago manages to plant a handkerchief that had been a gift from Othello to Desdemona in the possession of Cassio. And he uses Emilia, his wife, who is Desdemona's
Lady in waiting,
exactly.
Yeah.
Who has the handkerchief. He gets it from her. He gives it to Cassio. He stages this conversation with Cassio where it appears that they're talking about his relationship with Desdemona when in fact they're talking about someone else. But Iago manipulates it in such a way that Otello, who's listening from behind a column, misinterprets the conversation. He then, in public, a representative from the Doge in Venice shows up to invite, to give Otello his marching orders, which is to come back to Venice. Otello then names Cassio as his successor on Cyprus, which is exactly what Iago didn't want to have happen. Iago gets very angry. Otello then publicly shames Desdemona, and there's a beautiful piece of music at the end of the third act where all of the characters on stage spend some time expressing their feelings about what's going on here. It's a beautiful piece of music. That's the end of the third act. In the fourth act, we see Desdemona, who realizes that Otello is very angry with her, and she sings this beautiful, beautiful song that her mother used to sing to her.
Before we go on with the story, why don't we take a moment and listen to this aria that Desdemona sings. Here's Kyrie te Kanoa as Desdemona. We've listened to music from the beginning of Act 4 of Otello. And if you tuned in during the music, you heard an affecting scene sung by Desdemona to her lady-in-waiting, Emilia. And performing Emilia is Julie Ann Miller, who sings at the Lyric Opera of Chicago. She's in the studio, as well as David Gordon, who has a lot of experience, New York City Opera for one, and we were basically going through the story of Otello there, and Desdemona sounds worried. Even though I don't speak Italian, she does sound like she's troubled in that aria.
She is. It's pretty clear at the beginning of the fourth act that she realizes, and she knows what Otello thinks has happened. She knows that she's innocent, but she also knows that his temper is such that unless he's given clear proof to otherwise, he's going to act on his suspicions. And so she's concerned that he will in fact take the action that is about to take place. She sings that piece we just heard. Emilia leaves, she sings a prayer, she goes to sleep, and in comes Otello, who wakes her with a couple of kisses, which is sort of a, you might call, a leitmotif of the opera, is the music of the kisses between the two of them. And when she wakes, he asks, "Have you said your prayers? Because though I'm about to kill you, I don't want to kill your soul." And they have a bit of an argument, and he strangles her. And then Emilia returns again, having heard the commotion, and sees what has happened. And Otello says to her, she was having this affair. And she says, "Who told you that?" "Oh, Iago told me that." "Why would you believe him? He lies about everything." Iago, all the other men come in, and it becomes clear over the next few minutes. It's a very fast-paced conversation that happens, that in fact Otello was wrong. Iago set all this up. Everybody reveals. Rodrigo, my character, has been killed by Cassio in the meantime, but has confessed that they set everything up. And everyone sort of spills all the info. Otello realizes the horrible mistake he's made and then stabs himself.
The end.
The end, curtain down.
Well, that's the story of Otello, and listeners should know it's one performance live in Miller Auditorium this Friday night at 8 o'clock, and details are online at KalamazooSymphony.com. I'm speaking with Julie Ann Miller and David Gordon. What has it been like to work with this assembled cast? How long have you been in Kalamazoo rehearsing for Otello?
The first rehearsal was Wednesday evening. So it's basically a 10-day rehearsal process, counting the day of the show.
Is that typical, or is it more or less?
Well, for a semi-staged work, it is, I guess, pretty typical. For a fully staged work with sets and scenery, it's usually a 3-week to 5-week process. It's very exciting with this particular production because even though it says it's semi-staged, it's actually pretty much fully staged. So we'll have the costumes, there are beautiful projections for the scenery, and a fair number of props too. So it's been quite exciting to see it all come together so quickly. And it's a great group to work with, wonderful singers, great actors, and really a wonderful director. Vince has been great to work with.
Mm-hmm. He has. It's been a great process. We've really done a lot in a very short period of time. And there's also, I want to mention, a big sword fight in the middle of the first act.
So a little bit of training for combat then as well. Tell me what it's been like to work with Kalamazoo Symphony Orchestra's music director, Raymond Harvey.
He's fantastic. His attention to detail and his clear love for the music and appreciation of what the singers are doing, it's really great. He's also an amazing pianist. We have a woman named Helen Lucan who's been playing the rehearsals, and she hasn't always been able to be there. So he sits down at the piano and plays the score as well. It's been great.
And I think with him at the piano, it's a special privilege for us because we can really hear what his ideas are for the music, because he is actually leading us through from the piano. And also it gives us the ability to, if there's a slight tempo change that we want to do that makes it easier for us to sing a certain passage, he's even more sensitive to that, being at the piano and working with us. So I've been very impressed by his skills as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's really interesting to go behind the scenes. Will you be doing a full run of the Otello before Friday night?
This evening we have our first rehearsal with the orchestra, and though I'm sure there will be some stops and starts, we'll go straight through the piece. Then we have a dress rehearsal tomorrow, which, barring anything unexpected, we'll go straight through. Then we'll have a night off on Thursday and then the performance on Friday.
Oh, right. Resting your voice. Well, tell me about what vocalists require in terms of preparation and preparing their own voices.
Well, you always want a good night's sleep the night before and a couple days before that if you can. Staying hydrated, and then for me, I wait to warm up until closer to the performance time. Everyone has their different rituals. Some people warm up right in the early part of the day, and then they go through their day, and then they just check to make sure things still work in the evening. I just tend to keep quiet and, don't go and play at a park with a bunch of kids or anything like that. I have a child, so park is what we do. But you want to make sure that your voice stays fairly relaxed throughout the day, and warm up, and on stage you go. I don't know what your...
Yeah, I am actually one of the people who I get up in the morning whenever I get up on the day of a performance, and I will sing for 15 or 20 minutes just to sort of get things going. And then, as Julianne said, take the rest of the day fairly relaxed, get some exercise to sort of get the rest of the system working the way it needs to. And then just a little bit of warming up again to make sure it's all happening the right way before the performance.
I would imagine that one of the most critical things for you, one of the most important things on your list, is to get into the space and hear what you're going to hear. I know that when you practice in a practice room for weeks and weeks and then suddenly go out and on stage in front of your jury or whatever, it can just be such a shock to adapt to the change in sound around you. So tell me about adjusting not only to that, but to duets, choruses, massed voices. That's pretty tricky.
For for me, adjusting to singing with other voices is always the trickier part. The space, we're as singers, we're taught to not listen to ourselves, because if we listen too much, then we don't have a true understanding of what our voice is actually doing. And also, every space is different. Some spaces you get a lot of reverb back at yourself, and other spaces it sounds like you're singing into a pillow. This space, Miller Auditorium, is actually very pleasant to sing into, so it's been a treat. But for me, when you're singing with different voices, everyone's timbre mixes differently with things. Sometimes if you have two very similar voices singing together, it's hard to hear the other person. So it's learning to adjust and adapt and make sure that you are moving together, not only as actors in a story, but also as two musicians, making sure that your voices really bloom and develop together.
Yeah, I think that experience of singing with other trained singers, I mean, getting together and singing an ensemble number with a group of singers it's fascinating and amazing, because there are these times when you feel your voice disappearing into the sound that everyone's making. It can be a little bit disconcerting, but also the satisfaction of bringing all of the different parts together and completing the piece of music. The scores that we look at are just a blueprint for what happens in the theater. And so getting together and finally putting it all together is very, very satisfying. And I have to agree too, it is one of the most difficult things, I think, as a classically trained singer, is to get used to that idea of not listening, but just feeling and knowing and trusting what you do as a singer is right, so that when you step into a space that sounds like a pillow or a space that sounds like a cathedral, you maintain the technique and the strategies and the things that you know how to do.
Wow, that takes a lot of fortitude. The concert again is Friday night at 8:00. Details at kalamazoosymphony.com. And we picked out a crowd scene, I think, a drinking song here. Where are we in the story again, David?
This is in the first act. It's after Otello has made his entrance and left, and Iago has started his plot to deface Cassio, and everyone is celebrating the return of Otello and the wedding between Otello and Desdemona. And Iago, with the help of Rodrigo and the rest of the guys in the chorus, convince Cassio to continue drinking so that when the captain comes in a little later, he'll be drunk and will be demoted, and all sorts of nonsense will ensue. So this is the scene where we're helping to get him drunk.
Guarda, oggi impazza tutta Cipro. È una notte di gioia, dunque...
Cessa! C'è Marti Cebello per un napo potato.
Sì, ancora beverdevi alle nozze d'Otello.
We've heard music from Otello, the drinking scene from Act One, and Verdi is working beautifully with both orchestra, voices, soloists. He's really on his game, as they say. If you tuned in during the music, I'm talking to two singers who are taking roles in Friday night's performance of Otello, Julie Ann Miller, singer from California, now living in Chicago, working with the Lyric Opera, and David Gordon, who was raised here in Kalamazoo. Marie Kerstetter was one of your vocal coaches, and now based in New York. Well, we just have a few minutes left here in this hour at WMUK. Otello is such a big piece. I think we were, during the music, talking a little bit about opera and its effect on people, and sometimes it can have a great effect. If you've never seen opera before, it can be kind of overwhelming, and this production might be absolutely perfect. There will be super titles so you can understand all of the words. The Miller Auditorium is a great sight lines. You can understand the action. Opera can become one of the greatest entertainments you'll ever see or experience. And it sounds like that's sort of what happened to you, David, going from playing saxophone to singing in opera.
Yeah, it did. When I first got introduced to opera, I mean, I had known about opera, of course, for many, many years, but when I first sat down and really listened and really watched and realized that it's such a culmination of the development of all of these different performance forms. There's acting, there's singing, there's the musicians in the orchestra, the dancers, the design, the direction. It really is a fully developed piece of performance art at its best.
It's a combination of the muses.
It is. There's this German word, Gesamtkunstwerk, where everything, all of the different work, all of the different artworks come together to form this kind of performance. And I decided that that's what I wanted to be a part of.
It's kind of a wild dream. I mean, not everyone gets to sing opera.
It is a wild dream. I think those of us who are doing this are very, very lucky to have been able to, to have the tools, first of all, to be able to participate in it, and also the fortitude to stay with what's a very, very difficult business to negotiate, and a very difficult way to make a living, if you can make a living at it. And so we're very lucky to be able to do this.
And I think I try to remind myself every day that I go to work to play dress up and play make-believe, which is something that we love to do as children. And I mean, there are so many other elements that have to occur. But I think coming back to the fact that we get to be creative every day, and we get to try new things, and we get to live in this beautiful music. And when we're studying it and we're learning it, it's such a treat. And I think that's what keeps me, at least, and I'm sure you as well, David, coming back to the art form despite the difficulties or the walls that we maybe encounter.
Well, Julianne, tell me a little about, if when you're looking into the future, what productions will you be singing in this year? Or opera singers, their calendars can go for years and years, but what are you looking forward to?
Well, as an apprentice at the Lyric Opera of Chicago, so as a Ryan Opera Center apprentice, we cover things, like I said. So I'll be covering Donna Elvira in Don Giovanni, and covering a role in Il Trovatore, and then singing a small role in The Passenger. And over the summer, we will be workshopping and performing Don Giovanni as young artists. So I'll get to actually sing Elvira. And then I'm going to go to the Sugar Creek Song Festival in Southern Illinois, and we'll be doing a semi-staged Die Fledermaus in English. So I'll be singing Orlovsky in that, which should be fun. It's a operetta, so there'll be dialogue as well as some really catchy tunes. So,
you're married and have a child. How do they come with you? Do you have to say goodbye for little short periods of time?
We're figuring that out as we go. It depends on, David has a young daughter as well. It depends on where I'm going and how long I'm going to be there. They may come up and visit from Chicago later this week, but we'll see. My daughter's a little under two, so she's still does better with routine than with traveling. So.
Right. And for you, David?
Well, my daughter's in first grade, so taking her out of school to travel gets a little complicated. My wife is also from Kalamazoo, actually, Nicole Argyris, who studied violin with Barry Ross for a long time, who was the concertmaster of the symphony and assistant conductor until recently. Coming up for me, we do the performance Friday night, and I will fly back into Newark Airport in New Jersey, get in my car, and drive to Mahwah, New Jersey, where I'm music directing a production of Spring Awakening at the college there. So I go right into Tech Week for another show. I've taken some time off and had my assistant there taking over. And then I have a concert of a Handel oratorio called Judas Maccabeus, which is a sort of rarely done piece of work. And the summer, I don't have any specific plans for yet. And then in the fall, a couple of engagements and hopefully a lot of auditions to keep this going.
Wow. I'm just amazed. It's really great to hear about your lives. And I know how much hard work goes into it. I know you said dress up and play act, but you take it so seriously, and that's how you create art from those concepts that appeals to all of us who are so lucky as to see your production. Again, it's at 8 o'clock this Friday night in Miller Auditorium, Otello, presented by the Kalamazoo Symphony Orchestra, Raymond Harvey conducting. Finally, we would like to play something here. A scene from Act 1, was it, David?
Yeah, this is the duet between Otello and Desdemona before all of the jealousy and betrayal starts to happen. And I mentioned before that Boito's libretto skips the first act of Shakespeare's play, but in this duet, a lot of the backstory of the way that their relationship began and the love they have for one another, which comes from the first act of Shakespeare's play, is expressed in the text of this duet. It's beautiful. And it will also include the sort of leitmotif of the kiss that I mentioned earlier.
Well, bonne chance for Friday night.
Thank you very much.
La breccia